The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. I found in my studies of hundreds of e-commerce stores that operational efficiency is far more important than almost anything else in terms of determining your success. And that's why you should take a look at Fulfill. It's the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and, most importantly, profitably scale your 8- and 9-figure brand. It does that through helping you identify operational bottlenecks that you can solve, providing better forecasting and supply chain planning and PO management, and also leveraging their powerful warehouse management system, which results in fewer mispicks for better customer experience. They're the highest rated ERP in our community, not NetSuite, not Scubana or Odoo, but Fulfill. So start focusing on growing profitably and check them out at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what one-click upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running. Check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I have a guest, always excited, but especially excited for this discussion. I'm joined by Avi Panhar. He is the founder of multiple companies, including WooThemes, WooCommerce. We're going to be diving into that, talking about that. He also has a new venture called Cogsy, as well as the Life Profitably podcast and book, which we're going to dive into. And we got connected through a common, kind of a common acquaintance, had a chance to kick it off. And I love his approach. We're going to start kind of out of the gates on about living a life that is in sync with your business, trying to build. I think he's had a very storied career in the e-commerce space, has had a lot of roller coaster rides up and down in terms of building great things, you know, really burning out hard, which we're going to talk about. And it seems like it's a big focus to him these days, is building a life that's sustainable, that actually is, you know, not selling your soul and burning your soul to just a burnt crisp to be able to get an exit. So I'm excited to nerd out about that, among many other things. So welcome, sir. Good to have you on. Thanks for making time to do this.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Andrew. And I can definitely emphasize already multiple roller coasters. The highs have been high and some of the lows have been very, very low.
Yeah. And I want to, maybe we can start at the risk of being, I don't know if maybe dark is the wrong word here, but we're going to just dive right into the deep end. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about WooThemes and WooCommerce. And then I want to talk about Cogsy, your new thing. But let's start with this. And you wrote something that I think this is an excerpt from your book. I'm just going to read it for you. As the entrepreneur of a financially profitable business, you're accustomed to nourishing the life-sucking beast that consumes every mental, emotional, and physical aspect of you with its voracious appetite. In reality, at what cost are you doing this? Are you overfeeding your business beast while malnourishing the more critical and holistic aspect of the self? That was the position I found myself in several years ago, tired, unfulfilled, and hungry for something more out of life. So I'd love if you could take us. I mean, I think all entrepreneurs at some point or another resonate with that at various depths. Some people are listening right now feeling, oh my gosh, this, I feel so heard and seen right now. Where were you? Do you remember where you were when you were writing this, or what specific moment you were thinking of? And maybe you've had many, but where were you?
Yeah. So this specific one, Andrew, time-wise, we're talking late 2017. And what had happened, I was working on my previous company, Convergio. It's now called CM Commerce after it got acquired by Campaign Monitor. Working on the company, doing well, growing well, like we'd grown well throughout 2016, 2017, truly hit product market fit, multiple million dollars ARR. And we get to a point late in 2017 where we realize that kind of your, without shifting blame, like partly kind of your challenge on kind of your Shopify side to determine kind of your revenue and payouts, and partly our misunderstanding and reporting thereof led to essentially a massive delta. I think at the time it was like about 20 to 25% of revenue just wasn't there. And at the time, like we were, even though we'd raised a small round in Convergio, I decided not to raise a Series A round and we'd pushed on to profitability. So didn't have massive kind of resources. And I remember kind of getting to that point, just like, oh, hell, like this revenue is not here. We need to immediately change things. Had to lay off team members to create some space immediately. And I remember those months, and I think that's kind of the more specific part of that journey that that section refers to, is I remember those months afterwards, like going to work felt like taking a screwdriver to every single screw in the business and seeing if I can eke out another kind of 0.1 of a kind of a degree of juice, you know, from it. Because we suddenly went from thriving company, not thriving at all, having to fix things, and then not having the resources to invest in growth.
And sorry to interrupt, when you said revenue wasn't there, was there an accounting mistake? And all of a sudden you just came in one day and you're 25, like, I mean, how does 25% of revenue just disappear overnight?
Yeah, so anyone that's familiar at least with the Shopify App Store, I think it's better today, but I mean, this is in the early days of the Shopify billing API. Our understanding at the time, Andrew, was that there's essentially kind of a bit of a lag in how this kind of shows up. So merchant approves the charge. We only see that with some delay, and then Shopify only pays that out like weeks later. So like we could kind of chart growth, but we can only validate that growth 6 months or 6 weeks, say, down the line on average. Right. And we were probably not as like, so revenue was still going up, but not to the extent that we thought it was kind of going up. And I think just that shift in energy or direction for the business at that stage, I think it took the wind out of my sails. And as soon as it took the wind out of my sails, like, and I stood back, I was like, oh, like I wasn't as energized by work. Wasn't as motivated by it. And I suddenly felt that, well, I created this machine now. On paper, this was worth kind of multiple million dollars if I could sell this, meaning I needed to feed this beast. I can't just let this beast die now. And like when I talk about the beast here, like part of the beast is also just my ambition, right? That I think for every entrepreneur, like my experience, at least in the past, has been if I fly through a milestone or a goal too quickly, I just set a new one that's even harder or even higher. Right. So like it's something like I keep feeding the beast. It's not like I'm not involved or not responsible.
Apologies for interrupting, but I feel like the beast is such an applicable term because it is this insatiable thing. And I mean, you mentioned this thing that was worth something. I feel like there's a real weight to, even if you're someone who really aspires to have a business that you invest in deeply, but you also invest in other facets of your life. Like if you imagine if you've built something that has some level of worth to it, it's kind of like walking a tightrope wire with like four briefcases stuffed with cash, right? Like you feel like if you just relax and you're like, oh yes, you can do that, but you know if you could sell your business for even a 5 or 6 multiple, if you lose $100 million in profit or $100,000 in profitability, for example, you don't lose it. You lose $600,000 in enterprise value, and you're always thinking it's kind of like that thing, that idea where, for people, if you have a consulting rate of $1,500 an hour, which is really high, like people, if I feel guilty playing with my kids or doing something small or having a beer because I'm wasting this money, and it's not logical, but you kind of get in your mind and you trick yourself, or at least you create this stress that maybe on paper is there, but is this sinking at all? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So yes, like all of those things are there. I think as I walk that tightrope, like I always knew, like I never built any of my businesses for that matter to kind of with the exit in mind, to the extent that like plan for the exit. But you always, I think going from Woo to Convergio and now to Cogsy, like there is part of, well, I at least know what not to do if I want to be in the position to sell the business. But along that way, I think what happened for me at least is like I also made lifestyle changes, right? Like I definitely leveled up my life, right? So suddenly kind of without being, I don't own a sports car, for example. So I would say nothing too flashy, but kind of post conversion now, like we have done things like we've bought a holiday home, which have been significant for our family. But that again, like sets that bar slightly higher in terms of what future businesses need to do. So to your point, like I think at all times you're like, I was very aware of the value that I was creating and aware that it wasn't liquid. Like if I can't take the cash out of the business, then I'm not necessarily investing in those other things or nurturing those other things, which means the beast is just taking kind of more of that. But probably the most vulnerable thing that I can share here, Andrew, is that beyond the monetary consideration, I think years ago, a good friend and mentor of mine, Heaton Shaw, and those were in the early days of Woo, he helped me change my mind about money. He just asked me a question about why do I fear money? And I said something, and he said, you know, at 80, there's two types of people in this world. You know, one type knows how to make money. The other type doesn't know how to make money. The first type will never fear like figuring out how to make more money. And that changed my mind completely. The part that I have, you know, probably to this day, have not, you know, fully figured out for myself is the notion of relevance. And I think going back to that section that you read there, at the back of my mind, I was the co-founder of Woo that left a thriving company and said, I need to do a new thing. And I suddenly looked at Convergio and, like, fair enough, battling all this kind of, you know, concerns around the kind of the financial component thereof. But the other part of it and the other beast that I'd created was, like, 80 is a successful entrepreneur. What are the people going to say? Like, and don't even ask me to define who the people are, but what are the people going to say if he suddenly fails at this thing, right? And I mean, to this day, I think it's part of my makeup. It's part of the beast that I kind of, you know, still feed. After successful ventures, I go forth and I do new things. And part of what drives that and makes me probably push harder than what some others may is that notion of, well, what are the people going to say, right? It's like, what do people, like, what do they think of AD if he just retires and just fails at his last thing and just says, well, made enough money, I'll just retire to the countryside kind of thing.
So did you leave, and just to clarify, did you leave Woo because you thought, and I think this is another thing that I have, I think other entrepreneurs have, is just this, and you kind of allude to it a little bit in this concept of hypervigilance around your business, like, you know, almost feeling like you need to work on it because otherwise it's going to tank. Did you leave Woo partially because you're like, okay, it's in a good spot, it's an upward trend, I want to leave while things are good and before things potentially get rough in the future so I can leave on a high note? Was that part of the calculus?
No, not at all. The short version, and it was that Woo is absolutely thriving at the time. Magnus, Mark, my co-founders at the time, like, we had different opinions about how to best take the next steps. And at the time, I mean, I was young. This is 2013, which makes me 28 at the time. And I really wanted to push onwards. Like, for me at that stage, like, I would have told you the thing that I actually thrive on is a challenge. So I wanted to learn. I wanted to take on a new challenge. And I wanted to use this incredibly fast-growing, profitable machine that had become Woo to fuel that exploration. And when the three of us couldn't agree on the direction, because it was consensus, we were equal partners there, I made the decision to rather move on and try my hand at a new company, because I wanted to reapply the learnings that I had in Woo and see, like, to what extent, I mean, the question that I had, again, one of those existential things, at least, you know, for me, was I wanted to disprove this notion in my head that I was a one-hit wonder. I wanted to kind of prove that I can replicate some of the success, and that we weren't just lucky with Woo. So yes, I mean, I left at a good time when the business was at a good place. I would argue that 18 months after that, the business was in a much greater place when Automattic bought it and I was not involved at all. Yeah.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit, or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement, or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ACF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. And I want to get into Woo in just a minute here, but a couple more things on the kind of running a business, having a life side of things. You've had multiple exits. You've thought deeply about this, and you've got kind of a track record you can look back to for pattern matching. Do you think it's realistic to, if you're going to build something truly great, truly life-changing, that you can have a business and also a very rich life? I mean, I think the idea of, you know, having, you know, a lot of people say, and this is true in my life, I had a lot of imbalance, and I've heard people say this, like I've worked very hard in my 20s and a lot of my 30s, and I feel like it's given me the freedom to have a lot more flexibility in my, you know, in, you know, past that. So having periods of imbalance one way or another can kind of set you up for periods of comfortable imbalance later. But that said, like, do you think it's possible to build a, how hard is it? Do you think it is to build a, you know, business that you can have really invest deeply in your personal life and also your business life over a long period of time? Or in your life, if you look at it, did those periods of deep rest come like in between exits? Like you'd work for a while, maybe get a little respite here and there. You'd sell a business, you'd really deeply recharge, then you'd go do it again. Like which one of those seems to more accurately pattern your experience?
Yeah. So not the latter. I kind of Woo to Convergio, we were talking space of months and I was doing a new thing. I did like no rest at all. Like I jumped into the first thing that I thought was a good idea. And then Convergio, so post acquisition, I spent 13 months as campaign monitor. And towards the end of that, like I had the idea for Cogsy. And then if it wasn't for COVID and I got sick, meaning I got sick with COVID and I was just out for about 2 months, I would probably start on that sooner. So definitely not the latter. I think what I found, Andrew, is that if we're trying to create space, try and find some kind of balance, I think doing that on an ongoing basis is probably better. So I tend to agree with you that there are periods, there's still periods for me where I work harder, I push harder, and I try and do more, even if that is maybe a fallacy, right? Like I also know that at times, but sometimes more is just more. That's, I'm okay with that kind of, you know, sometimes taking the biggest hammer to the nail present, right? But I think there have been like some things at least that if I can do them on a kind of a continuous basis, they do create some space, right? So whether that's, you know, for me, it's exercising almost daily. Like I exercise 5-6 times a week, if not every single day. It is trying to have family dinners. It is trying to make sure that like my wife and I get away from the kids like at least once a month, you know, completely away from them. So it's all those continuous things that if I manage to do them and I'm quote unquote disciplined about doing them, then that becomes a hedge to feeding the beast, because that is ultimately the thing that kind of unplugs me from this matrix where the beast exists. Like that's the only thing that I've truly found kind of, you know, works for me, because ultimately I love working and I love my work most of the time, even the hard times. And I spend a lot of time thinking about the business and the space, like connecting non-obvious dots is something that I do well. And I don't like limiting that to, well, I can only do that 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, right? Like if I have a great day over a weekend, then that should be fine. I should also just make sure that I make the appropriate time and investments into those other things that are important in life, because they create some space. I think there's a counterintuitive kind of effect there where by investing the space you have in those things, they do create some more space, even if it's just this mental and emotional space or a little bit of this buffer between myself and where the beast is situated.
Yeah. And I'll link up, there's an article you have on your blog, talks about some of the things that help you the most in terms of a really kind of an hour in the morning that you took that wasn't for planning your day, that wasn't for working. It was really for just like kind of resetting, doing whatever you want and enjoying, you know, space outside of business and your roles as a father or a parent or a spouse. And some other things as well. I thought it was super cool. So we'll link up to that for people who want to check that out. I want to dive into WooCommerce. I would say almost everyone, if not everyone listening, is very familiar with WooCommerce. Our store, our audience is, you know, probably average store in our community is, you know, probably I'd say 4-ish million, 3 to 5 million, and they're running on either Shopify, Magento, BigCommerce, or WooCommerce. And so if you're increasingly too, you know, if you want to have your own self-hosted platform that you can customize, I feel like Woo has taken the lead there over Magento, which has kind of just gotten fairly unwieldy unless you have some real specific needs. Anyway, how did Woo, for people who don't know the story, and not that we need to dwell here too long, but how did you start? Because WooCommerce came out of Woo Themes, is that correct? And were you one of the founders of Woo Themes?
Yes. So I built the first product that became like, which led me to meeting Magnus Mark, and then that became Woo Themes. And the short version there, Andrew, is with WooThemes, we got into, WooThemes just built kind of your pre-built templates for WordPress. So WordPress was evolving as CMS at the time, and we had found this ability to essentially help kind of your businesses and kind of individuals get started on WordPress for a much lower cost compared to going to an agency or freelancer. And we got into a category that we back then called kind of your business themes, which was just a brochure website for any kind of business that realized like we need some kind of presence online. And it became a significant part of the business. And then those customers of ours kept asking us, well, hey guys, like how do I add a shopping cart to this, you know, to this site or this theme that you've given me now? And we started looking at what was out there in the WordPress kind of your space. And I believe at the time there was, the biggest one was a plugin called WP eCommerce. And we looked at it and we felt that we couldn't design themes that would look great. Like it had limited templating language, like it wasn't there. And like design was always a thing. Design was the thing that I think differentiates it. We invested a ton of money in design. And Magnus and Mark were great designers as well. So we sit down this path of saying, well, if people want the shopping cart, like we need to build this. And through kind of your various trial and error, we tried to build internally. We tried to collaborate with someone else. We tried to collaborate with kind of your Matt's right-hand man, Matt Mullenweg's right-hand man at the time. All of them failed. And then eventually we found two guys working on a plugin called JiggerShop, which we then kind of forked and we persuaded them to kind of start building, you know, for us. But it really was, I think the key thing that I always want to highlight to everyone is that was a serendipitous moment where like it was never the plan for us to build an e-commerce platform. We just followed customer feedback and then we tried things that didn't work. For whatever reason, we were kind of convinced enough to continue down this path that when we got there, like we made the due investments. And even then, when kind of, you know, when Jay and Mike, which came, they came from JiggerShop, when they came along, they changed our business model. Magnus, Mark, and I still thought that we would have the kind of your plugin that had the platform and then we would sell themes. And then they brought this model of, well, no, you like, yes, you sell the themes, but you actually make money off the add-ons or the extensions. And again, like we listened and we adapted. And within a year, like that part of the business became 90% of our revenue. So like there's a lot of kind of, you know, luck and adapting along with the kind of your persistence and making smart choices there.
I think, you know, the answer to this question, maybe it's more the magnitude of it. You left to do something else. WooThemes/WooCommerce gets acquired by Automattic, which is the company behind WordPress. Was that something that, was that hard? Like when you heard about that, like having left, was that a tough day? I'm sure there was like a mix of both, right? There's pride that you helped build this, but then also you left before that fairly major acquisition. What was that, getting that news that day like?
Yeah, surprising, because I found out about it. I mean, the part, if anyone else has listened to me speak about this before, my exit, at least in terms of my relationship with Magnus Mark, like wasn't great at the time. Like we were, I mean, the disagreement led to us kind of fighting as well. So we're friends again. And as we record this, I'm seeing both of them for a braai, which is a barbecue in South Africa on this weekend. So we've reconciled that. But at the time we were not speaking. And I found out the news as it was published on TechCrunch today. So I think, I mean, I can give you... I mean, it was a surprise, right? Like, I didn't expect that, especially because, and again, like, Matt and I have done, Matt kind of has invested in both my companies since. So I think, I say this with a lot of love, like, up until that point, like, Automattic had never purchased such a WordPress-specific company. They'd always done kind of your tech/acqui-hires. So that was never on the cards. And maybe had I known that, and they'd shown some kind of interest sooner, like I would have sucked it up for a little bit longer and stuck it out. The true answer though, Andrew, is, and this is the hindsight part beyond just the reaction on the day, is to this day, I have no idea what size exit Magnus and Mark got. I would assume it is kind of significantly larger than what I had gotten, you know, 18 months before. I think some of that like delta would have been made up by my own exit for Converjo years later. So financially, like I've always looked at this and realized that the part of my life that I needed to resolve at that stage, or the box that I needed to tick, wasn't more money in the bank. It was, I had this feeling of being a one-hit wonder, and I needed to prove myself and do something new. So even if I was still around with the WooCommerce exit, like my journey would have been different, right? I would have still been, I was CEO at the time that I left Woo. So I would have probably been CEO at the handover. Maybe I loved working for Automattic or not. Maybe I'd still be there today. Like it's a lot of maybes. But the part that's definitely clear is like that path didn't necessarily mean that I would have ticked that out of the box of like, you know, answering to myself, would I be able to recreate some of that success in a new business or new company?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people underestimate the value of time as well. I mean, there's, I can look back at big, you know, business exits I've had in the past who in the short run, I regretted from a monetary perspective, thinking I should have held this, it would have been more financially beneficial. But looking back with more perspective, can say, well, then that money allowed me to do things at a much faster rate in terms of change, you know, career movements or changing locations or whatever it was that really set up the next 5 years really beautifully. And had they been delayed 2 or 3 years, who knows what would have happened. So
yes, exactly. Yeah. I think, and you know, one little anecdote, going back to that kind of section you read from my book earlier, is I remember at the time I had a conversation with my therapist. And I think I kind of proposed something to her, like, I just want to walk away from Convergio. Like, someone just take it. Like, I'm just done with it. And I paused and she said, okay, tell me more. And I'm like, but I'm scared of doing that because I don't know what I would do next. And she said to me, kind of, and I remember to this day, she said, Eddie, you know what? It's going to be incredibly hard for you to be in this thing, have all this stress that you have right now, and be have the clarity of thought to figure out like what these next steps are. And I think to your point is like that's what exits do, and that's what hindsight does, right? Like it ultimately creates a space, and sometimes in a kind of a way that you and I don't necessarily control, that space leads us down a new path that we didn't even know existed, or a new opportunity that we didn't know kind of might pop up. And had we still hung on to this thing that we had before, maybe we weren't kind of, you know, vigilant enough or agile enough to take up those opportunities or to go down those paths. So I think, again, yes, hindsight's an exact science. Some things work, some things don't. But there is definitely a kind of some part of me that believes in like creating space for serendipity. I like a lot of people would say you just increase the surface area for luck by doing that at times. Mm-hmm. So I think it's different ways of explaining that. But yes, there is an opportunity cost to holding onto something, even though holding onto it is valuable in its own right.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.